This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Top of the hour, it is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at Mint Gaming Hall, Franklin, Kentucky. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, in Cleveland, Ohio. Oh, I guess there's just a couple things to talk about today on the docket. We'll talk about some of those things with Maestro Mike Palm coming up. I wonder about liability for the World Cup, which gets underway today. We'll talk about that with Mike. Certainly with the NBA and the NHL finals here underway, what those things look like as well. So, Jensen, let's kick it off with what we saw last night in a comeback for the ages in the world's most famous arena.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
What was it in game one of the Eastern Conference Finals? Was it 22 or 24 points with just under 8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, and the Knicks erased that and won game one? And I thought, I don't know if I'll ever see anything like that again. Now, it wasn't to that degree, because remember, they cut it to 15 going into the fourth quarter. But it was 29 points in the second quarter, in the third quarter, that the Knicks came back from. It's an all-timer in the history of the NBA Finals. And Jensen, I hope I live to see another one like that last night. I don't know that we will ever see a bigger second-half comeback in the NBA Finals like we saw last night.
Yeah, it's come back from 29 down. No team had come from more than 24 points down in a finals game. And you could have found the Knicks as high as 17-1 on the live money line. Comeback for the ages. How do you get up off the mat if you're the San Antonio Spurs? We will find out in a couple of days' time. But a commanding 3-1 series lead. New York on the precipice of bringing home the Larry O'Brien Trophy.
And again, if you're looking at the number series price now, Knicks are minus $5. I'd look at the MVP if you want to get involved with the Knicks somehow instead of laying the $5 to win at least one more game. Jalen Brunson minus $1.40. OG Anunoby right now, the second choice after the tip-in heard round New York and maybe the basketball world. We'll be talking about that play and that comeback for decades to come. Comebacks have been in vogue in the Stanley Cup final as well. Every game. It's not just game to game. It's period to period. As we've seen so far here. So we're all knotted up at 2. Carolina has flipped back to being the favorite tonight. We'll talk with Jonathan Davis in the next hour about this game in specifics. But Jensen, every time you think one team has momentum, the other one grabs it right back.
It has been an over party, to say the least. And it has been one-way traffic there on the betting side. 95% of dollars, Dave, on the over 6. I'm seeing 6.5s populate at FanDuel, at DraftKings. So no evidence to the contrary. At least there wasn't again there in Game 4. The Lenovo Center going to be hot and heavy. Moving day in the Stanley Cup Final later on tonight. Excited to see where that will go once we have puck drop at 8 p.m. Eastern time.
And again, if you're a little squeamish as to who's going to win the series, but you think you have a better feel for Conn Smythe, Mitch Marner still is odds on at $1.05. I think that's a very playable price point. We'll talk about that with Jonathan Davis a little bit later on today. 2026 World Cup beginning today. We got two matches with Mexico and South Africa, and the Czech Republic is going to take on South Korea. Jensen, Team USA will begin tomorrow in earnest. I think the world is ready, and the United States on the world stage when it comes to the FIFA World Cup.
Certainly is. Still time. You have until 3 p.m. Eastern to get into the VSiN and Splash Sports $1 Million World Soccer Championship contest. It is knockout style. It is survivor style. I am really intrigued to see where the strategy is, the four teams that people will pick to try and advance to the knockout round. Dave, we usually have a couple of upsets in group play. Where will the group of death surface this time around? And will we see the final acts here from the greats like Messi with Argentina, with Ronaldo at Portugal? Will there be a dark horse that finds its way into the semifinals? Morocco wearing that hat in 2022. Can we finally get a repeat winner for the first time in forever? Will Argentina be back in the final to try and defend the World Cup crown?
Remember a couple of years ago, Patrick Mahomes signed people went, man, why would Patrick Mahomes sign that super long-term deal with the Chiefs forever, essentially, and give it a team-friendly deal? Well, maybe it was with a wink and a nod, and they said, hey, we'll get you done here a couple of years down the road. Well, that couple of years down the road has happened. They've added two more years to the contract and pushed the total value now, Jensen, up to $504 million 0.75. Don't forget the 0.75, but almost $505 million now to that total value of that contract.
Yep, it's the right thing to do. And I would say that the value of the contract pales in comparison to how much he's been worth to that organization and to the NFL. So bottom line, the first $500 million valuation of a contract in the National Football League. Come on down, Patrick Mahomes. Great to have you. We in baseball have accomplished that feat just a couple of years past. So good to see from good old number 15. Hope that he is healthy for week one. It is great for the game and will be great for the Kansas City Chiefs as well.
Sometimes those business transactions, you say this is a win-win. It does feel like that's been a win-win for the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. I think both parties very, very happy with what they're both getting. We can't wait to see what's going to happen at Freedom 250 this weekend here at the White House. Please check out the First Strike podcast with me, Rob Moreno. I had Reed Kuhn on, who was on our program yesterday. And also a special treat this week, people. Ricardo Lamas, the bully, one of the baddest men on the planet at 145 pounds, has been in some of those historic fights, and a guy that knows this fight game inside and out. Had Ricardo on the pod this week as well. And it is different because it's outdoors in D.C. And I was wondering, has anybody ever experienced something like this? Ricardo has. Let's get his thoughts on the Freedom 250 card.
Just wonder, you fought the best in the world throughout your UFC and MMA career. Have you ever fought outside?
I did, yeah. So before I kind of made it to the big show in the WEC, I did have an outdoor fight in Cripple Creek, Colorado, which is about a two-hour drive into the mountains at almost a 10,000-foot altitude. So that was my only fight outdoors, and I'm glad not only for that, but because of the altitude too. It was crazy. Yeah, it was so high they didn't even let us fight a full fight. So they cut it down to 2 5-minute rounds instead of three.
Wow. So the reason why I asked you that, of course, Ricardo, being on the White House lawn, it's June, as we know. I've lived in Washington, D.C. for the better part of 20 years. It's quite humid. Do you look at this fight card now when we break down these fights here and say you have to factor that in? Will heat, humidity actually take its hold on world-class fighters?
100% it will. And, you know, I would feel that every time I go down, you know. Well, I don't know if anybody else doesn't know, but I do half my camp here in Illinois and then go down to Miami and do my other half of the camp down there. So whenever I would go down to Miami, there'd be like a week, about a week long adjustment period where I'd have to get used to the heat and the humidity in the gym because, you know, in our gym, we didn't have any AC. The garage doors would be up. So all the humidity from outside would come in. And it chokes you, you know, it definitely has an effect on you when you're training. So I think if these guys aren't training in those conditions, you might see that factor into the fight.
So, Ricardo, let's get to this card here that we're going to see on Sunday night. And I'll start right at the top with Ilya Topuria. And again, you know, by osmosis, you've been in with the guys that Ilya Topuria has been in with, most notably Max Holloway, obviously, when he moved up to 55. And took care of Max. First guy to actually stop Max Holloway. Going to take on Justin Gaethje. And this is a naturally bigger weight class that Topuria finds himself in. So far, so good. But you know this weight class, 45 up to 55. What is the difference here for Topuria going up against a naturally bigger guy who's been in some of the most historic fights we've seen in Justin Gaethje? That's the reason why they call him the highlight.
This is a very interesting fight. You know, they say that styles make fights, and this is a classic, you know, technical boxer versus brawler type style. And you have to do one to beat the other, right? How do you beat a technical boxer? You brawl him. How do you beat a boxer, a brawler? You got to box him and stay technical. So it's kind of like who's gonna pull off their game plan? Who's going to be more aggressive? Who's going to land that one shot that's going to put the other guy away? I think that Ilya Topuria has already been in this situation. You know, he fought Josh Emmett at 145 pounds, who's another heavy hitter, kind of brawler type fighter, but Ilya picked him apart in the fight. So he's very, he has a very high fight IQ. And, you know, the one thing I don't like about Justin Gaethje is he comes out hard. But then when he starts to get a little tired and his energy dwindles a little bit, he makes a lot of mistakes. He puts his head down and swings for the fences. So if Ilya notices that and capitalizes on it, it might be a short night for Justin Gaethje. But on the other hand, a brawler always has that puncher's chance, and it just takes one shot with Justin Gaethje to put you out.
You know, Ricardo, as you know better than most in your fighting days, you know, it's mixed martial arts, right? Justin doesn't do the mixed part very well. You are an elite grappler in there, but you could throw hands as well. Would you advise Gaethje to try to wrestle against Ilya Topuria and switch it up a little bit?
I think if what he's doing isn't working in the beginning of the fight, he definitely has to switch it up. We haven't really seen Ilya's wrestling. He does have great Greco-Roman wrestling that he's been practicing, you know, since he was little. So it might be tough, but if the stand-up isn't working, you got to do something else to pull the win off.
All right, so I'm anticipating by your tone and tenor, Ricardo, that you're not sensing an upset here for the massive underdog in Justin Gaethje. Are you rolling with the Spaniard?
I'm not counting him out, but if I had to put money on the line, I'm going with Ilya Topuria on that.
You got to check it out. It's a fascinating conversation with a guy that's been in there with the very best in the world, so he knows exactly what he's talking about, a guy that's fought outside, and it was just an illuminating conversation with somebody like Ricardo Lamas. So Reed Kuhn and Rob Moreno have the numbers, and Ricardo Lamas has the experience and the knowledge. This week's show, before you bet this UFC Freedom 250 card, I urge you, wherever you get your podcast, check out First Strike. It was a fantastic listen. And I'll just say this very quickly, Jensen. The number has come down a little bit. Gaethje is starting to get a little bit more respect as the week has gone here, down to plus 390. He was close to $5 betting underdog. Now he's under $4, so just monitoring that as we get closer and closer. And if you haven't seen the pictures yet for what this thing looks like on the White House lawn, it looks amazing. I cannot believe what they're doing. Let's hope for good weather. We'll talk about that. I'll break down a main card fight a little bit later on in the program. But when we come back, Jensen, let's talk Stanley Cup final. What are we going to get tonight? After the chaos in New York in the NBA finals, Raleigh, buckle up, baby. Game 5's headed your way. We'll break down the numbers next right here on VSiN by the Books. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
Championship season is upon us. VSiN Pro can help you bet it smarter. There is a limited time special. It's a good one. It's an early bird pricing on our football season special for just $175. So the sooner you sign up, like today, the more value you're going to get with full access to everything we do through the Super Bowl, which is in February of next year. That means the continuing saga that is the NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup Final. The World Cup begins today, plus Major League Baseball, which has been chaotic as well all summer long. You're going to get our daily best bets, real-time betting splits, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. And later on this month, June 22nd, we're going to release our NFL betting guide to attack futures, win totals, divisional races, and the full season ahead. So head over to VSiN.com/subscribe right now. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. Going to have the maestro Mike Palm join us in the very next segment, get his thoughts on the World Cup and beyond. And I wonder about liabilities here, and I wonder if people have been hopping in live, whether it's the Stanley Cup final or the NBA final, because they've been tumultuous to say the least. Jensen, we've got Game 5 back in Carolina tonight. I mentioned the Conn Smythe, and I just want to start there before we break down the game. And I do think there's some value. If you can find it, and I was searching yesterday and I could not find that $5 that is available at some places right now in Mitch Marner. I do believe and I contend, and I've been saying this for about a week now, not to say that it's completely result independent, but I think it's going to be really hard to wrestle away the Conn Smythe from Mitch Marner no matter what happens in these last three games. I guess what could really discourage that thought process is if Carolina wins the next two and they won it in six. Do you see it a similar way? Because the way I see it is that if it goes seven, I don't care what happens in game seven, Mitch Marner's going to win it. And the only way he doesn't is if VGK cannot win one of the next two.
I don't know. This has been one of the more perplexing spots here as far as the odds go. And, you know, what do you do? Damned if you do, damned if you don't. You know, first I would ask, do you think this is going seven? And if you do, then I would say if you think that Carolina does win it, Jordan Staal is the guy. It just feels like he is the flavor of the moment. He would be the guy that has the momentum. So if you're going to take anything at plus odds, it would probably be Jordan Staal or bust for me. If he continues kind of being right man, right spot, and you think Carolina wins it, heck, they could win it in six, and he could be the guy. I don't know, buddy. This has been an odds market that I have stayed away from. I'm okay with it. One of the uniquenesses of the Conn Smythe being the entirety of the postseason. You know, Brett Howden has had all these goals. He's nowhere to be found as far as
100-1
VGK. I mean, it is mind-boggling when you look at some of the stat lines of the other VGK faithful, yet it still pales in comparison to an odds-on for Mitch Marner. As it pertains to the game tonight, Dave, if you think that it's Mitch Marner, I would think you go play like points, right? That if you don't want to wait and you don't want this thing to go to the votes, why not? You would think logically, if Mitch Marner is going to win it, he's going to have at least a point or more in the rest of the games as long as this series goes. So I would rather play game to game than be in that market. Would that be something you'd be interested in?
That's an interesting theory because, again, what Jensen's getting at, people. And by the way, if you're watching this on FanDuel Sports Network, if we can put up those odds again. And the reason why I want to show them is if you saw Battle of the Bastards with Jon Snow, where he just draws his sword and here comes everybody else on the other side. It's Mitch Marner. And then here comes all the other potential suitors that are Carolina Hurricanes on the board. I mean, you're going to get to 150 to 1 before we see another Golden Knight. I mean, it's insane when you look at it. But Jensen, I think that's an interesting thought because what you're getting at is if Mitch Marner gets a point, theoretically, like if he goes scoreless and they play three more, well, then that's where Taylor Hall, a Stan Coven, a Jordan Staal, as you alluded to, that maybe those guys could kind of get in there in the front door, especially if Carolina obviously were to hoist Lord Stanley's Cup. Brandon Bustie is the interesting one to me at 150 to one. I didn't think he was particularly great in the game four win, because they kind of limited shots. But he was good when he had to be in the third period, right? And that's why I think they made the change from Frederik Andersen. Now, I'm assuming you got to stay with Brandon Bussey. You know, I made the comparison in Major League Baseball to a closer that once you yank that closer, it's hard to put the closer right back in the next day. Kansas City Royals are finding that out right now. But, like, I'm looking at this, Jensen, and I go, Mitch Marner, $1.15? Yeah, I do think he's going to win the award. But unless something like in games 5 and 6 where Carolina is so dominant, and as you mentioned, no points for Mitch Marner, that's the way these other guys can get there. It's interesting that you mentioned Jordan Staal, because I heard Stormy say in her program with Jonathan Von Tobel, check out Money Moves 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern right here in the network. She thinks it would be a disgrace if Jordan Staal won the Conn Smythe, because what we're getting at, this is why you and I technically stay away from these markets, is because Stormy's point is, this is not the NBA Finals. This is not one series. It is the totality of the postseason. And she's saying, like, you know, Jordan Staal has been great in this series. We know he's, you know, a record with 4 goals in the first 4 games. We hadn't seen that since, what, Mike Bossy, I think it was, back in 82 with the Islanders. Like, we're seeing stuff we haven't seen in generations. But to Stormy's point here, this is not the NBA Finals. This is the totality of the postseason. And sometimes, Jensen, the voters eschew their own criteria and make it up as they go along. We talk about this in the NFL, whether it's comeback player of the year, what does that mean? And sometimes it's the letter of the law, I think, that gets people on this. And when you have no true law and you just kind of make up the rules as you go along, this is how you get hockey anarchy in betting markets. And I understand where Stormy's coming from. I do. But I also see what you're saying in that Jordan Staal at plus 650, there's now sentimentality as the old man and what he's doing in the 4 goals in the 4 games that are starting to get him so short on the board at plus 650. So it is that ultimate seesaw of what are you going to do? Are you going to do the spirit of what the Conn Smythe is supposed to be? Or are we going to go now to the sentimentality of the better story, which would be Jordan Staal?
Yeah, it is going to be really fascinating to see how the votes do come down. And ultimately, it is about how the series plays out. As it pertains to tonight, again, I've said it before. show me a piece of evidence to convince me to play an under as far as the total. I don't see one again. This feels like another 4-3 potential game. I would like Carolina tonight. I haven't gotten there yet, but it feels like if it is Bussy continuing the momentum here and you get to the home ice, another just for the heck of it, Dave, where would you rather sweat tonight? Would you rather sweat an under in the first period, which has been just ridiculousness on so many levels? The under 1.5 is actually minus $1.10 for the first period. The over is just $1.20. Would you rather sweat the first period under or an alternate total of under? Because 5.5s have been where it's been traditionally. Under 5.5 is plus $1.10. Which one would you rather sweat tonight?
Neither.
That's the correct answer.
It absolutely is. You know, it's funny. We've been talking a lot about Rob Brind'Amour and his choices. And again, I was surprised that he went to Brandon Bussy. And I just wonder, is there any chance? He had mentioned that Frederik Andersen needed rest. That was his prognosis from Dr. Brind'Amour. And that's why he, you know, made him the emergency goaltender. He was not going to be the backup. Again, I use that closer analogy. We don't know what he's going to do. We assume it's going to be Brandon Bussy tonight, but Frederik Andersen's 200-1 in the Conn Smythe. Is there any inkling that a coach, in this case in Brind'Amour, or a manager in your baseball parlance, would kind of say, I'm going to go back to my guy? Do you think that's even in the realm of possibility tonight?
It is, but I think you ride with a hot hand at the moment. And why wouldn't you, especially going back to home ice? Just threw this together as far as the Mitch Marner conversation. Mitch Marner to have a point parlayed with VGK getting a puck and a half tonight, that is minus $1.30. If you think that VGK wins it outright and Mitch Marner has at least a point, that's plus $1.48. Now, the money line for VGK is plus $1.36 at DraftKings. So, you know, again, you're having to lay over $2.50 for Mitch Marner to have a point. I'm getting to this idea. Would you rather play Mitch Marner to have 2 points tonight at plus $1.75, or would you rather play that parlay and get the puck and a half laying $1.30?
I do like Carolina tonight to roundaboutly answer your question. And that would probably, you know, I think Mitch Marner is that Conn Smythe bet is where I'm probably going to go. Again, I mentioned to you and our esteemed producer, Joe Friso, if I could have found the $1.05, and if I can find that $1.05, that's probably what I'll end up doing. But that kind of takes into account your bet that you're theorizing with right now, that Mitch Marner's going to get another point, whether it's tonight or somewhere along the series. And, you know, with what he's done in the totality and the spirit of the award. But again, I'm banking on a lot of factors there that voters see it the way that we assume the way the vote is going to go, like Stormy's talking about. But if they all of a sudden switch it up and go, Jordan Staal was the difference to win the Stanley Cup, not the totality of the postseason. Now we're talking about an NBA award. So it is very interesting, the roads. And by the way, Carter Hart, if you're interested in him for Conn Smythe, he's longer odds than Freddie Anderson. He's still playing. He's 250-1. Wow. Mike Palm, what about liabilities in the World Cup? Let's discuss with the...
Tuned in to VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
Circus 2026 football contest. They are open for business. You don't have to live in Vegas to play. After you're required, like it's punishment, in-person registration, Winner Circle Proxy handles your weekly submissions so you can make your picks from anywhere in the United States. Winner Circle Proxy is VSiN's preferred proxy service. So one glorious trip to Vegas, you can play all season long from anywhere in the United States. Schedule your appointment now at wintercircleproxy.com. I did that, and it was fantastic last week. Jensen Lewis, as you know, we are signed up officially for Circa Millions. We have not signed up for Grandissimo because, as Mike Palm knows, once we win millions, then we're in Grandissimo for life starting next year. The aforementioned Mike Palm, VP of Operations at Circa, the D in the Golden Gate Casino, joins us now. Give him a follow on X at Circa Maestro and joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Mike, it was great seeing you in person again last week. Fun doing the show with you as always. When I signed Jensen and I up, was there a ripple effect back there in the room behind the desk that, like, oh, Jensen and Dave are in this year. We better start getting that money ready now.
It was noted. We'll put it that way. Now, the conclusion may not have been the same, but it was definitely noted. You're looking for, like, a lifetime exemption if you win a major here? What did you all you have to do is point. Are you guys getting into the regular Survivor this year?
Yeah, Dave is,
for
sure.
We're not going to do that one as a team.
I see. Yeah.
We're doing those separate.
Yeah. Yep. It'll be good. I don't know if you guys booked it there at Circa. Mike, did you guys take any action on the congressional baseball game? Run line by the Republicans was free money. They went 11-2. Eric Schmidt, the U.S. Senator from Missouri, named MVP. I don't know if you saw it. Like, he dove for a foul ball down the left field line at Nats Park and bloodied his nose. That's what we talk about, laying it on the line for your country. Well done, Senator Schmidt. That's where I wanted to segue to. Laying it on the line for the country. The World Cup begins today. Your kind of cliff notes of what you guys have seen action-wise, whether it be futures, some specific props, the Golden Boot. What have you guys seen thus far at Circa for the world's biggest tournament?
You know, what we've seen is some Portugal money come in. Most of it's been on to win, right? To win the World Cup. We've seen some Portugal money, people betting Spain and France, the favorites, which I think is tough at 5-1, 5.5-1 in a 48 team field. That's new expanded, World Cup. We've seen Mexico money for today. We should have a big crowd here today. You know, 4 years ago, much bigger crowds for the Mexico games than for the USA games. And I can't even remember 12 years ago back showing the Mexico games at the downtown Las Vegas Event Center. That's before we even had the turf on the place. And the 7 a.m. games drawing, I think 1,200 people for a 7 a.m. Mexico game back three World Cups ago it was. So we expect a big crowd. Last time out, when Mexico played Argentina, we had to open up the Galaxy Ballroom on the third level where we have our Super Bowl party because so many people came to that. So we expect Mexico to be fully supported here over the course of the next month as well.
Yeah. If Senator Schmidt can get some outs, I don't know if he can pitch, but the Royals might sign him because they need some relief help. Mike, I'm wondering about Team USA because I know, like, when we talked to Thomas Gable there at the Borgata in Atlantic City, right? They can't get enough. The Knicks money just poured in for the NBA Finals, and it didn't matter what he moved the number to; they were going to bet it. Do you get that same sense with Team USA in the World Cup? Are people wanting to bet nostalgia? Do they want to bet with their heart and bet with the home country? Or are there some shrewd bettors out there that go, you know, maybe they can get out to the knockout round, but we really don't have visions of grandeur for Team USA?
I don't know. This is a USA team now that has a lot more players that play at the elite levels of the European domestic leagues than ever before, Dave. So I think they do. They have a very balanced group, obviously. The odds boards will tell you how balanced this group is. They're one of the few favorites with the plus in front of them to win the group. Turkey's very tough, too. I think the schedule falls well for them in that they get to play them last. And that, you know, if they both won their first two games, then, you know, a draw will simply get them to move ahead. I could see them advancing, finishing first or second. I think it's a much bigger, obviously, advantage to finish first. But if they do win the group, winning one, maybe even two games in the knockout stage, we'll see. There's some questions about the goaltending. But I don't really like to get involved with USA because then you emotionally, you're double, mm-hmm. double whammied if good things don't happen.
I always find it funny if Euros are being bet on the United States. And it just, you know, it's just kind of funny to say out loud. We are obviously big Survivor fans in the NFL. We do have a competition between with VSiN and Splash Sports. It is unique. And Mike, you're great at contest theory, and I thought I would throw this out to you. So the contest requires you to pick four teams out of the group stage that must qualify for the knockout round. And traditionally, as synonymous with the NFL, you can no longer use those teams when you get into that knockout round. Would there be, and we'll use the United States, because I don't know if they can win an additional match depending on where their draw is, if they win the group, if they qualify second. Is there kind of a team you would look at to say, all right, this might be a dark horse team that I would want to holster and say, not only could they get to the knockout round, but maybe they're that chaos candidate as far as where the World Cup ends up?
Well, I bet Netherlands at 20-1. I think people are sleeping on the Netherlands a lot. You know, they've been a perennial Final Eight team, Final Four team, and I don't think a lot of people are talking about them. They're pretty chilly on the board at 20-1. Christopher Sullivan also convinced me to take Norway at 30-1. And then I bet both of those teams to make the semifinals. The Netherlands was plus 370. Norway was 6-1. I'll give you a couple teams that I bet to advance out of group. Here's one I would use in this competition. I would use Austria. I think they will get out of group stage. Here's my reasoning. You know, it's hard. A lot of these teams are coming together, and what are they playing? Two or three friendlies heading into this, and it's new groups, and they really don't have a lot of experience, and they sort of learn the dynamics of the team, especially if there's different players than there was last time out on the fly. Austria has had Ralf Rangnick as their head coach for a whole generation. They play this gegenpress style. They're used to it. I think they have the advantage early on in group stage and that they're familiar with each other and they have a cohesive plan. A lot of these other teams are going to rely on trying to defend, having one guy that can distribute the ball and a score, right? So I think Austria is a good team. And then I also bet that was minus 175 to come out of group. I bet Ecuador the same way, and they're the same price, minus 175. Look at Ecuador's defense. It's everybody playing in the top line of the top European leagues. I mean, three of them played in the Champions League final. So I think Ecuador will have extremely low-scoring games, and they'll advance out of group. Maybe if you want to use Ecuador and Austria as two of your first four in that competition would be my advice.
Before we get to Palms Pressing 3 in the next segment, as I mentioned, it was a lot of fun being there. It feels like a month ago already. We watched game two together over at the D and saw that crazy comeback, me, you, and Jonathan Von Tobel, where it looked like VGK not only was going to win game two, they're going to go up two games to none, and they're just running away with the Stanley Cup. And then all of a sudden, all hell broke loose. And that seems to be the trend here so far in the Stanley Cup Finals, that what we think we know, we don't know. It's not game to game. It feels like it's period to period. What do you expect from VGK now to get back up off the deck potentially in game five tonight down there in Raleigh?
Well, Marner's got to get involved again. He had 10 shots on goal in game three, had none in game four, right? And Eichel did not play particularly well. Get rid of these dumb penalties for an experienced professional team that's won a cup. How about two games in a row, too many men on the ice? Unacceptable. It's easy to say Carter Hart has to play better, but I mean, he had that stretch at the end of the regular season. He had a 9.30 save percentage. He's at, what, 8.7 in the finals? He's the first goalie ever to give up four or more goals in the first four games of a Stanley Cup final. So, and hopefully he can get off to a little quicker starts. I know they've been great in the second, but they've usually dominated in the third, but it's been Carolina in the first and the third in this series and Vegas in the second period.
As we sit here, Mike, today, regardless of result, is it Marner or bust as far as Conn Smythe, or is there anyone worth adding at this stage from a longer shot perspective, even maybe a shorter odds perspective? Because it feels like the narrative is it's Marner regardless of result here in the Stanley Cup final.
I don't know. I'd like to have some Howden tickets too. I think those
that's
are
what
the,
I thought too.
I think those are I think those are the two choices as far as that. And speaking of sitting here today, on what, June 11th, if the playoffs started today, Jensen, our Chicago White Sox would be the 2 seed in the American League. I just want everybody to think about they would be the 2 seed in the American League.
Yeah, in first place today in the AL Central, you wake up on June 11th. Very quickly, did anybody go to the window last night and bet the Knicks when they were down 29 in the third quarter?
You know, there was no is the answer, right? No, people were betting, you know, plus in game 22.5 and 24 and totals, right? Not money line. In effect, I don't know if we had the money line available when it got over 20 there. Jensen, I wish you would have been out here for this series in Summerlin. We had Brewers fans everywhere here. We brought a bunch of people out for Waukegan. As I called it, the Michelle Obama series for bookmakers. If we went low, they went high. If we went high, they went low.
Buddy, hey, next year, I'm happy to come out there. You make it happen. Dave and I will do the shows right there from World Headquarters. Happy to do it next year for sure.
You got it, buddy.
That sounds fantastic, and I love that phrase. When we come back, it is the hottest segment on VSiN, Palms Pressing 3. What's on the maestro's mind? We'll find out next right here at VSiN by the Books. We'll be right back.
VSiN by the books, right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the books on this Thursday, and if you know the show, and hopefully you do by now, you know what time of the week it is. It's time to get inside the mind of the maestro. Yes, Jensen Lewis, it's time for Palms Pressing Free.
Pressing? Yes, I say it's pressing.
This is Palms Pressing 3.
Now, my mother told me never to answer a question with a question.
Sir, my client has answered every question asked by this committee with the utmost sincerity.
All right, let's first start out trying to get inside the mind of Jensen Lewis. At the start of every season, a team is a collection of players that has developed a reputation based on past performance. Maybe you're the closer. Maybe you're the ace. Or maybe you're just the reliable veteran, all of whom have a role on the team based on their performance and their reputation. But Jensen, what happens when the current performance doesn't match that reputation? And when that occurs, does the player continue trying to be the player he used to be instead of adapting to the player he currently is while digging a deeper and deeper hole trying to find that past glory? And when it's happening, is accepting your own decline, limitations, or changing role one of the hardest psychological challenges a professional athlete faces, or is it something they run from never really facing it at all?
Great question. And it pertains, I'll take you from the individual experience. You and Dave could have gotten in the batter's box against me in spring training in 2011, and you would have hit the same exit velo that Ryan Braun did, almost killing someone in the outfield with a home run. I think my ERA was like north of 50, and I couldn't get anybody out. It was a very scary time. Because mentally, I'm used to, you know, ramping up, having success. There was nothing. I don't know if I went full Ben Stiller and, you know, his wife, Christine, and burned everything the day before to try and exercise some demons. But it is a real thing. And a lot of that, the way that you can bounce back, yes, it comes from the individual. But if you have a great support system and it's not really present a lot in professional sports, Dave can speak to this as well. It is so cutthroat. As soon as someone that's competing for your spot sees you struggling, they're not running over to put their arm on you and say, hey, don't worry, J. Lou, everything's going to be fine. That is dollar signs. That is longevity. That is job security. It is all in jeopardy. And so it is a very unique and few and far between scenario where you have teammates that really rally behind you. And that's even... You know, Dave, like, hey, Juan Soto, Francisco Lindor, they both struggled at the same time with the Mets. Neither one of those guys you saw just kind of come and put their arm around each other. Hey, don't worry, you're going to be fine. Now, they've got all the money in the world, but there is that dynamic. I know you've seen it in football, too, where, hey, if you're not a team guy first, guys are just like, well, forget you, dude. This is karma. You kind of deserve it.
Yeah, we've seen it. You see it in those locker rooms, and you see where the media goes and where they don't go. And sometimes that's pretty much a tell as well. It's not all unity in there, Jensen, as you well know. Excellent question. And I look back to when Danny Graves, the all-time saves leader in the history of the Cincinnati Reds, starter, then had to become a reliever. Sometimes mentality-wise, if you can switch those roles, Mike, because your performance isn't matching, you can elongate your career a little bit, but not all guys mentally can handle that.
All right, question two. Let's let Jensen put on his lobbyist hat. As we head towards a labor impasse in Major League Baseball, both sides have lobbed their opening salvo. The union's initial proposal was expansive, with revised definitions for revenue sharing within the current competitive balance tax system. It included not only the parameters for a soft top and floor, but it also addressed minimum salaries, free agent eligibility, the qualifying offer, the pre-arbitration bonus pool, the draft lottery, and more. The owner's first offer called for a fundamental change to the sport's financial structure. It covered little else other than a hard cap, $245.3 million, and floor, $171.2 million, with a 50-50 revenue split and the centralization of all television revenue. Yes, even the Dodgers supposedly agreed to this. Jensen, what specific counterproposal will the union offer to address team spending and revenue sharing without accepting a hard salary cap?
Yeah, you have to get past, first of all, you're using a term that shall not be named in the Players Association lineage, and that is salary cap. By the way, for people that don't realize the Grand Canyon-sized chasm between where the Players Association and the ownership group are, that's why we're going to have a lockout. Okay, unless something drastically changes, if that is still on the table come December 1st, it is the owners are going to lock out the players because the players aren't going to capitulate to that. Now, you bring up the revenue share part, and we're going to get to a point where MLB has tried to consolidate. You've seen sort of the decline of the regional sports network, and MLB is now producing, I think, half, if not more, of, you know, the teams as far as broadcasts and getting the games out to many more people as possible. There is a possibility that you could maybe close the gap with a different rev share model. Owners want 50-50. Players want a little bit more piece of the pie because we have a finite amount of time to be able to maximize our earnings. Owners can own the team for three decades and they're fine. So to me, how would I counter? I would say you may be able to get the Players Association closer to a compromise if you remove the cap, but you increase what we call a spending floor. And I know there are economists and people out there like, oh, you can't have a floor without a cap, blah, blah, blah. I'm not privy to the negotiational part of how they've gone back and forth, but that's been the issue, Mike and Dave, is that you've had teams that have not spent, period, when there are comparable free agents, there are young players that deserve salary raises or long-term extensions. We're starting to see that happen, even with guys with no service time. But I think you have to have a minimum spend, so you need a floor at the very least if you're going to get the players to kind of come closer to where the owners want to be.
Point of order, Your Honor. The owners did stipulate a competitive balance tax, a luxury tax, and a payroll surcharge as they tried to avoid the word cap, Mike, but we all know what they meant.
All right, Jensen, question three, and with all deference to Rolaids, the Dodgers are up 6-1 in the sixth with Shohei Ohtani on the mound with an ERA of 0.8. The Nats are up 9-1 and need six outs in the Bay. And the Spurs were up 29 points at Madison Square Garden. Jensen, why can't anyone close anymore?
Because I'm retired. Sorry, Mike. Perfect save percentage as a closer. I tell you, I have not seen the implosions the way that we've had. Yesterday's an all-timer. And I told Dave, guess who was on Nats money line yesterday and Dodgers alternate run line -1. I thought I was home free in both. And the only ones I get home, Knicks money line and the under 216.5, which I thought were dead in the water when we got to the end of the first quarter and halftime. There are issues, and Dave said, oh, this is a sore spot for Dave, and I totally understand with the way the Kansas City Royals bullpen is in shambles right now.
Ugh.
I don't know how you fix it other than you have got to be able to spread other guys, and I mean, you usually have four leverage relievers that you rely upon most through the year and then eventually into the postseason. Stephen Vogt did something a couple of years ago with Cleveland that I thought was really, really good, and it allowed everyone in the pen to feel like they were a piece of the puzzle. At some point, you're going to have guys hit a lull. You need others with leverage experience to be able to plug and play in there. That's what you use April and May for. So you don't overuse your bullpen resources. You don't have guys stretched thin, and some of that predicated on your rotation being able to get a little bit deeper into games. But there's going to come a time. It was me, Dave, my first time into a quote-unquote hold save situation was like my fourth week in the big leagues. And I had to come in relief of CC Sabathia. I threw three innings. That was how I got my first major league win too. He beat Justin Verlander and the Tigers, but it was Eric Wedge kind of saying, well, we got to find someone else outside of the three or four guys we're using. It ended up giving me the opportunity to eventually be one of the big leverage relievers in that postseason when I was a rookie. So that's where I would go, Mike, to answer your question. And I know, Dave, you got feelings on it. You have to have other guys that you give that responsibility to early in the year so that you can pivot when you get into these middle months and you got guys that are struggling.
Yeah, the bad beats that were out there in the world of sports last night, San Antonio had 76 points at halftime. Their team total was 107. I had a ticket on that, and they got 106. It's amazing what we saw last night around baseball and the NBA. But, Mike, I'll ask you very quickly to wrap this up here. Is it over? Because it felt like when the Knicks came back in the Cavaliers in game one of the Eastern Conference Final, you could put a fork in the Cavs. Is there any way San Antonio can come back from this?
What I well, of course, there's some way. But what I would tell you is I don't think game five will be close. Either San Antonio plays great and wins by margin, or they go fetal like a lot of these NBA teams and get run out. Speaking of telling people it's over, can somebody tell what's left of the 2014 Tigers starting rotation it's over? Verlander and Scherzer, let's move on.
Scherzer, not a good day north of border. But he did get, 3,500 strikeouts. That was good. Mike, you're the best. Everybody give him a follow at Circa Maestro out there and check him out and go say hi at Circa in Las Vegas.